Hello, and thank you for listening to Rangers to the Core. This podcast is brought to you by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Wilmington District Environmental Education Team. With this podcast, we strive to keep you informed, educated, and give you a behind-the-scenes look at everyday life as a park ranger. I'm your host, Dylan Brown, and it is time to get to the core of today's topic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Rangers to the Core. I'm your host, Dylan Brown, and today's subject is going to be about dam safety. So we have a special guest with us today that we'll introduce here soon, and I'm looking forward to it. But as always, we're going to start with our icebreaker, and our icebreaker for today, being it is vacation season, is what do you prefer between beach and mountains? And of course, if you have a alternate between beach and mountains, I'm interested to know what that is as well. So I'll start. I think mine's going to be beach. I think that's just because I grew up really close to mountains and spent a whole lot of time in mountains. So like my kind of getaway place would be the beach. What about you, David?
For me, living in Raleigh and everything, I prefer the mountains. My family and I were just at the beach last week, and I can do the beach for like 3 days or something. But the sun, the wind, the sunburn, I'd rather be in the mountains for a week or so. I mean, more deciduous trees, more shade, just rolling hills and all that stuff that mountains bring. So I'm more of a mountain guy.
Very nice. Yeah, I totally get that. All right. What about Carmen?
Goodness. So I grew up near Charlotte, so I was in between the mountains and the coast. But I would have to say probably my favorite. It's hard for me to choose, but if I have to pick, I'm going to go with the mountains. I do enjoy just going up there, kind of just into the mountains and just relaxing, seeing all the sights and things. You know, usually it's a little bit cooler. So, yeah, I'll stick with the mountains.
Right on. So what about you, Elaine? What's your preference between beach and mountains?
I love them both. I grew up in California, so I got to spend a lot of time both at the beach and in the mountains. But I would have to go with the mountains, especially in California. We had a lot of really tall mountains, and getting to go hiking and seeing snow in the middle of the summer and those great views, something that's always going to be close to my heart.
What about Grace?
Okay, so for mine, I would say beach. I grew up in the mountains. I've always lived in the mountain area. And there was about 8 months of my life that I did live at the beach and absolutely loved it. And I go to the beach any chance I get. So although I love the mountains and I still am drawn to them, I love the beach. It's very, very relaxing being around water and stuff.
Awesome. What about Emily?
I'd have to say that the beach is the place that I prefer to vacation now and spend time at. Similarly, well, I was born closer to the beach, so we went to the beach a lot and we vacationed in the mountains, but then my family moved to the mountains. And so now we vacation at the beach together. But the ocean holds a special place in my heart. So I think it's a really cool ecosystem. So I would definitely say beach.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. And then for our guest today, and which is Megan Garrett. She is with the Dam Safety, and I'm going to let her introduce herself a little more formally when David starts his interview here in just a few moments. But for right now, Megan, what is your preference, beach or mountains?
Well, I grew up near the Appalachian Mountains in New Jersey, and I've lived at the beach near Wilmington for a little over 8 years now, and I prefer the mountains. We moved here from the Pittsburgh area, and because my husband was like, we could live at the beach for a while, and I'm like, okay, we can do that for a while, and it's okay, it's all right, but I get sunburned super easily, and I definitely like the cooler temperatures in the mountains. Yeah, that's where I would go.
Awesome. Sounds great. All right. So now for the core of today's podcast, I'm going to turn it over to Carmen, and she is going to fill us in. So what's our core of the podcast today, Carmen?
Thanks, Dylan. Today we're going to be talking about dam safety at the lake projects. According to the National Inventory of Dams, there are approximately 84,000 dams located in the United States. Of those 84,000 documented dams, the Corps of Engineers has built 692 dams and operates 422 water reservoirs across the nation. These public waterworks projects provide 3.2 million gallons of water per day for local municipality water supply, prevention of an average $22 billion in river and coastal flood damages each year, and recreational opportunities for over 370 million visitors yearly on nearly 12 million acres of land and water. So today we have a very special guest with us today. It's Megan Garrett. She is the Dam Safety Program Manager for the Wilmington District Corps of Engineers.
Awesome. Without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. David Schwartz, who's going to lead our interview today, and let him introduce Megan for us. So it's all yours, David.
Hey, everyone. This is David from Falls Lake in North Carolina, and I will be interviewing Megan. Megan, what exactly is dam safety? I mean, we've talked about dam safety as a topic. I mean, we as rangers may know what dam safety is, but what exactly is dam? Is it safety for the dam? Is it safety for the public? What is dam safety?
Well, it's a little of both, David. It's definitely safety of the dam, and that's probably where my primary focus is, and the team that I work with in our district office, making sure that the dam continues to provide the benefits it's meant to provide and does not put, you know, people at risk that don't need to be. But it also is the public safety around the dams. We want to make sure that the public remains safe in any kind of risks that might be there because there's a dam that wouldn't be there otherwise.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, cool. So you work in the district office in Wilmington, right? What exactly do you do there as the dam safety program manager for ours?
Yeah, I do work in our district office in Wilmington, and I'm a geologist, so that's kind of my technical background. And as far as managing the dam safety program, I work with a whole team of folks. Some work in the district office with me, and others, like you all, work in the field. And we're all working together to make sure that we fulfill our responsibilities as the Corps, as a dam owner and operator. And my day-to-day is a lot of scheduling, routine dam safety things like inspections and budgeting for those items. I also provide dam safety training for the rangers and our other operations staff. And I provide technical oversight for our dam safety reports and documents. And I also participate in some of our inspections.
Yeah, that sounds like cool stuff. I mean, we're not talking about little small beaver dams. We're talking about fairly pretty big dams. Well, why did the Corps build dams? I know at Falls Lake, like, was it 200 or 300 residents had to be moved out of the area for us to build the dam, create the lake. I mean, we impacted a lot of people just here and, you know, all over the country and everything. So why go through all that effort? Why did we build dams?
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons that we build dams. And I think the biggest one for the Corps of Engineers, especially in the time of big dam building, when a lot of our dams got built, was flood risk reduction. So there were historic floods in populated areas that caused a lot of damage. And over time, you know, it was evident that these were just going to continue to happen unless something was done. And so the government made the decision. They, you know, did lots of studies and analysis to find where would be good places to actually create a dam that could hold water in times of too much rain and let it out slowly so that it didn't create the type of damage that we had seen historically. So that flood risk reduction is a big one, but there are a lot of other purposes that we've built dams for too. We have built dams for navigation. So in the rivers, if we want commercial traffic in our rivers, the rivers have to be deep enough. And when you go long distances over a river, the elevation will change. And to maintain that deepness of the river, sometimes we build a dam and a lock system so that we can move those boats up and down river without losing their draft. We also build dams for hydropower to make electricity. And for water quality, I used to work up in Pennsylvania a lot, and we actually have some projects up there that, because of the acid mine drainage from coal mining, they've built dams so that by the time the water sits in our lake for a little bit, mixes with some other water, when it goes downstream of our project, it's much better quality than it was when it came in. So water quality, environmental reasons, and there's lots of other reasons too, but whenever we, as the Corps of Engineers, build a dam, those purposes are congressionally authorized. So there have been studies done, and a lot of thought has been put into the benefits of that project versus any kind of negative things that may have occurred in order to build that project. And then once our projects are built, sometimes we add other purposes. So recreation is often one that gets added to our projects. It may not have been the initial reason we built the project, but now that it's here, let's take advantage of that. Also, water supply is one that often gets added to our projects, as water is a very important resource. And so not only do we want to hold it back when we've got too much, but we also want to be able to provide it when maybe we don't have enough. And municipalities can take some of that water for water supply purposes and treat it and use it for drinking and other purposes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the city of Raleigh for Falls Lake just took out like 63 million gallons of water yesterday for the water supply for Raleigh. And that happens basically every day. So every day between like 50 and 60 million gallons of water get taken out of the lake, all for drinking, for treating, and, you know, wastewater and all that type stuff. So, I mean, it's amazing what these Coors Lakes do. Is the Corps still building lakes? I mean, Falls was built in 81 to 83. I mean, a lot of the other ones were built in the 50s and 60s and something. Now we're in 2024. Are we still building dams and creating lakes?
Well, as a whole, the Corps of Engineers is, but only very rarely. And in the Wilmington District, we certainly haven't been. But we did, as a Corps of Engineers, build the Portuguese Dam in Puerto Rico. I think that one was completed in 2013. And we reconstructed Thames Lake Dam in Fort Jackson in South Carolina about 2021-ish. But those are kind of exceptions. The majority of dam construction that we as the Corps do now is mainly to do with repairs or rehabilitation of existing projects.
Yeah, we got to keep up what we have, don't we?
Yes, absolutely.
So what about in like high water times and like flood times? How is dam safety important? How does dam safety matter when we're have, you know, 5 feet above normal and everything?
Well, when we have high water events, dam safety definitely kicks into high gear. Our folks on the ground are doing extra activities to look for signs of distress and doing extra monitoring and reading of instruments. Because if you think back to physics class, we're actually putting an additional stress on the dam that's not normally there when we have the lake higher than normal. So we're loading that dam with that additional water. And we want to make sure, you know, it was designed to hold it, but we, because it's not got a lot of performance in that condition, we want to pay extra attention and do that extra monitoring that we have in place. There's always a balance between not adding to the flooding downstream that's happening when we have these big events, but also getting the lake back to normal as soon as possible. Again, the main purpose of a lot of our projects is to reduce flood risk downstream. So our water managers in the district have plans in place that they look at levels in the streams downstream, and they're kind of trigger levels for when we can release more water. But we always want to try to get the lake back to a normal level sooner rather than later. But again, without causing additional damage downstream.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of tough to realize sometimes when you're boating on a lake to realize that that water in the lake goes somewhere. It just doesn't stay in the lake forever. It eventually is going to go through the lake or go through a dam and go into a river and eventually to the ocean. So all the water goes somewhere, and flood or dams definitely hold back the water. So when we release it, it results in a much less flood downstream, a controlled release and everything. So what about droughts then? I mean, how does dam safety operate in droughts?
Well, in droughts, it also is kind of a different, you know, loading or stress condition for the dam than what it normally experiences. So we do inspect for different kinds of things during droughts. You know, if we have a part of a dam that's always wet normally, and now all of a sudden it's dry because we've got a really low lake level, we're going to do inspections and look for cracking and other types of things that we might have to pay more attention to than normal. But if I would say the high water is when I get more concerned than droughts. But there are still some other things we look for during droughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. So you mentioned hydropower before. I mean, that just seems so cool that a bunch of water going through turbines and creating power to electricity and out to homes and everything. I mean, that's what hydropower is, right? Is every core lake a hydropower facility? How would I know? Teach me about hydropower if you can.
Yeah, sure. Well, hydropower is really cool. We're essentially, you know, taking advantage of gravity because we've created this difference in height of the water from, you know, high up in the lake behind the dam to the stream below. So we've got this gravity height elevation difference, and we use that to our advantage to create enough force to turn these turbines to generate electricity. And it's kind of like free power at that point, which is awesome. But to answer your question about whether, you know, every core lake is hydropower, no, it's not. In the Wilmington district, we actually have 9 dams, and of those 9, only 3 of them have hydropower. And of those 3, only 2 of them are actually federal hydropower. And what I mean by that is that third project, it has non-federal hydropower, meaning the Corps of Engineers does not own the hydropower equipment or operate that equipment, but we let another entity use the water that we are already passing through our dam to turn their turbines and their equipment and to generate power. So it's kind of a good multi-use thing there. You can usually spot a hydropower dam by the powerhouse downstream of the project. So if you see a building downstream, if you see a building downstream of a project where the water is coming out, and then nearby it, you see a lot of power lines, transmission lines, that's a good indication that that project is generating hydropower. But another way to find out if, other than just asking one of our park rangers, if you see another dam, maybe it's not a core dam, and you're curious if it's a hydropower dam, you know, Carmen mentioned the National Inventory of Dams, and that is a great resource. The website is a little long to spout off to you, but if you just Google National Inventory of Dams, you're sure to find it. And you can search for a dam that may be near you and or even on the map. And once you click on that dam, it will tell you all of the purposes of that project. So if it generates electricity, hydropower is going to be one of those purposes listed.
I mean, don't forget about that quintessential sound that, you know, hydropower makes and everything. I mean, if you hear that sound at a dam, that sound is definitely hydropower and generation and everything. So other lakes that don't have that sound are not hydropower. But I mean, sometimes you may hear a loud siren by the dam that isn't that. It's more of like a warning thing. Do you know what, like, if I'm recreating downstream and all of a sudden I hear a siren, like, is that just like the noon o'clock siren, or what was that for?
Well, a siren can mean different things at different projects, but I believe the sirens associated with our Wilmington District dams are meant to indicate that we're going to be releasing some water out of the dam that we weren't previously releasing. So essentially, if you are, you know, recreating in that stream downstream, if you're a fly fisherman or you're near the banks, if you hear that sound, it means get out of the river because that water is going to be rising rapidly because we're going to make a release.
Makes sense. Yeah. So what do the Rangers do in regards to dam safety into the dam? I mean, it's already built. I mean, do we just eat lunch on top of the dam, or how can the Rangers help with dam safety and help with protection of the dam?
Yeah, our Rangers help a lot. They are the eyes and ears on the ground. So they're the ones really that if they see something that might be wrong with the dam or, you know, a cause for concern, they're going to forward that message on up to our office so we can take a better look at it. They also read our instrumentation on the dam and give us that information too. So that all goes into how the folks in my office watch the health of the dam, essentially. But the Rangers do so many things. I mean, they help answer questions when the public has it, questions about the dam, which is helpful because we want the public to understand why our dams are there and how they work a little bit and, you know, how we are taking care of them because we are taking care of them. And it's important for people to understand that their tax dollars are going towards this good cause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what about powerhouse employees? I mean, I guess the Rangers, do they operate the hydropower? Do they operate the gates? Do you know, what about that?
Well, so our projects that have hydropower, we actually have staff dedicated in our powerhouses to operating those generators and releasing the water through the dam through that powerhouse. The staff there also do our inspections of certain parts of the dam more associated with the powerhouse and reading those instruments for us.
Yeah, I know. I work at Falls. We don't have hydropower here, but us Rangers, we do operate the dam in terms of the gates going up and down, letting the water through the dam. So we do that. Okay, at Carr Lake, just a little bit mm-hmm. north of here, the Rangers do not do the gate changes. That's all the powerhouse because it's hydropower in that way. So every dam probably operates a little bit differently and different things like that. So it's a pretty cool world right there. So what if you live downstream? I mean, there's a lot of dams obviously protecting communities downstream. Is it safe to live downstream of a dam, especially during high water? I mean, can I recreate downstream without worry and stuff? I mean, I've heard about dam, you know, failures and stuff. I mean, is it okay to be downstream?
Yeah. Again, a lot of the reason the dam was put there is to help mitigate that risk for flooding downstream. So we're already putting those downstream communities in a better position than they were just naturally. And we inspect the dams regularly to make sure that we continue to provide that benefit. So there are some things that people who live, work, and play downstream of our dams should be aware of. Again, the National Inventory of Dams is super great. And one of the things the Corps of Engineers has done in that database is uploaded all of our inundation maps. So an inundation map is essentially kind of a flood map. And there are different maps for different scenarios. So some scenarios will be, this is for releasing water with a certain lake level. And this scenario is if the dam were to fail with a lake level here, this is what's going to happen. And all of the maps show a blue area that will have at least 2 feet of water, we expect, if that scenario were to happen. So if you go to the National Inventory of Dams and look at the map, and you can see if there's a dam near your house. But even if there's not a dam near your house, some dams can have impacts very far away. So just go and look at all the Corps of Engineer dams in your state. And if you click on them and you can play with the map layers, you can see that blue area fill in downstream of the dam and then zoom in and see if it affects you. If it does affect you, that's where, you know, you need to take some next steps because we want to make sure you understand risks that you may be subject to, but we don't have the full story. So if you are in one of those blue areas, you should contact your local emergency management agency. So your police department or your fire department, or maybe you have just an emergency management office for your local area or your county, and specifically ask them, you know, hey, I saw on the National Inventory of Dams, I might be in this inundation area because of XYZ dam. What's the plan if I need to evacuate? And they should be able to help you out and tell you, oh, well, we would be contacting you, or you would hear it on the radio, or whatever the procedure would be for you to get that information that you might need to get out of harm's way, if you do at all. So we have our internal emergency action plans that cover a lot of different scenarios like that, and we exercise those with our emergency management agency partners. So again, we only have part of the puzzle. We can explain how fast water might be coming, where it might be going, but those emergency management groups are the ones that know how they plan to close roads or change different traffic patterns in order to efficiently move people. And it's important to have that part of the piece of the puzzle, not just whether you are in the blue area or not. And If on the National Inventory of Dams, like I said, the Corps of Engineers has put our maps on there, but the Inventory of Dams has more than just Corps of Engineer dams on there. There are all of the documented regulated dams in the country. So you may see that there are some other dams near you that are not Corps of Engineers dams, and those will not have their inundation maps up yet, but you can still ask your emergency management agency if they have any information to help you plan what you should do if you get a call about moving or about a problem with a dam. Another thing to keep in mind, if you are in one of these areas where you may need to evacuate, is having an emergency kit. Along with a plan of what you're going to do, having that kit, you know, it's hurricane season right now, and living where we live, I think that's usually a big deal. And there's a lot of communication about hurricane season and having an evacuation plan, an emergency kit with water and shelf-stable food and flashlights. And all of those same kind of things can be used if you need to have a plan for potentially evacuating because of a dam failure.
Yeah, the Corps did build, you know, roughly 700 dams. And of those 700, there is 84,000 dams, you know, documented in the inventory system. So there is a good chance there is a dam by you, whether that's a 3 feet long dam or a 3,000 foot long dam. I mean, there's a bunch of dams out there. So it's not a bad idea to know what to do if something goes wrong. So speaking of going wrong, I mean, being a history person, I've heard of the Johnstown flood off of Pennsylvania. Was that a core dam? If it wasn't, then why should we care about the Johnstown flood and that situation that happened there?
Well, it was not a core dam, so that's a good thing. The Johnstown flood, like you said, happened in Pennsylvania. It happened back in 1889. So it seems like a long time ago, but we are still talking about it. It's still an important thing for us in the dam safety community. It was essentially the failure of the South Fork Dam near Pittsburgh, kind of. And it resulted in the deaths of over 2,200 people. So it was a really big disaster. It was the first major disaster relief effort by the Red Cross after that happened. And the reason it's important for dam safety is a number of things. I mean, one, I like to bring it up when I do my dam safety training talks, because it really impresses the importance of doing our jobs right and not letting bad things happen to our projects. You know, we don't want another Johnstown flood to happen ever again. So we want to learn from those lessons from the past and make sure that we don't repeat them.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. Yeah. So I was at a Corps lake recently, and I thought I saw like a hole or a depression in the ground. But you're saying the Rangers do such a good job of checking the dam and doing inspections and everything. I mean, I guess they already know about it. I don't need to tell anyone about it. I mean, do you think I should let someone know I saw like something that bothered me about the dam or not?
Yes, you should always bring something up. You know, just because our Rangers do an excellent job doesn't mean they could have missed something or that something's changed since the last time that they looked at it. And we would much rather get you know, a call or a stop in our visitor center and let us know that something fishy is going on, you know, potentially, and it being a false alarm than someone not bringing something up and something that we should have checked into. And maybe it could have been a less serious situation if we noticed it earlier. So, if you're at one of our projects and you see something that looks wrong or, you know, looks suspicious, definitely stop in the visitor center, talk to one of the volunteers there, or find a park ranger or a powerhouse employee. Or if you can't find any of those people, even one of our contractor mowers that's on the dam, they've been given dam safety training and they will be able to pass the message on. But I would say our rangers are probably the most accessible people to try to notify.
You know, all this talk about dams and the Corps of Engineers, I mean, it makes me just want to go visit more and more of them and everything. Can I go inside a Corps dam? I mean, I've heard of the Hoover Dam. You may have been to the Hoover Dam. The Hoover Dam's a massive form of concrete in the mountains and stuff. It makes it seem like, I think they even have an elevator and everything. Can I go in a Corps dam? How does that work?
Well, there's two things with that. A lot of our core dams are actually earthen dams. So unlike the Hoover Dam, they don't have big tunnels inside. They're just big, carefully constructed piles of earth. So you can't go inside those. But we do have a couple concrete dams in our district that have those tunnels inside called galleries. And one of them even does have an elevator. But unfortunately, they're not open to the public for tours right now. We used to give tours, you know, before 9/11. But with a lot of the different security measures we have now, we don't have regular tours for the public. But we as Corps employees do go in them all of the time to inspect the dam from a different perspective and also to operate them.
Yeah, cool. Okay. You know, speaking of being, you know, near dams and everything, I see signs on the road that say tail race. And it's kind of confusing because you go by the dam, you don't see any tails and no one's racing and stuff. And, you know, I think of that area as like a spillway. But like you mentioned spillway to core people and they're like, no, spillways are bad and stuff. So can you let us know, like, what is a tail race and what is the spillway and how do they differ?
Sure. Well, if you see a sign for the tail race, it's directing you to the bottom of the dam. So a tail race is where the water is coming out downstream of the dam. And typically we use that term when we talk about water coming out of a powerhouse, but it's the water that comes out downstream of the dam. A spillway, on the other hand, is kind of the method, a method for getting water either through or around a dam. And those pull water from the top of the lake. So there's a few ways we get water out of and through our projects, but the spillways specifically take water from the top of a lake elevation. And you may have seen some spillways just around where you live, maybe at a farm dam. They can be as simple as a pipe that sticks up in the lake with maybe a box on top to keep trash and debris from getting in that pipe. And when the lake gets up to the elevation of that box, it's going to flow into the pipe, a vertical pipe, and it's going to go down to the bottom of the pipe and then under through the dam, however that pipe outlets. So that's one type of spillway that doesn't require any gates or anything. There's another type of spillway that we have a lot of our projects called an auxiliary spillway, which the purpose of those is to pass great floods, like a lot of water around the dam so that the dam itself does not overtop, because like our earthen dams are not designed to have water flow over top of them. So in the hillside off to the side, we have cut down this spillway, a big trough that once the lake gets to the height that will flow over there, it will go through that trough and around the dam and then join up with the stream downstream of the dam so that it doesn't flow over the dam. You can kind of think of those as like that drain in your bathtub just below the faucet. When you fill up your bathtub, if the water gets too high, it goes through that little drain below the faucet before it overflows your bathtub and floods your bathroom. And that's kind of the purpose of these auxiliary spillways. Our concrete dams have spillways that are a little different too, that are over the top of the concrete dam, but they're lower than the rest of the top of the dam. And the water is meant to go over it when it gets to that height. And our John H. Carr Dam has even a special spillway that's got gates on it, those big curved pieces of metal. So we can hold some water above the top of the spillway and then release it by opening those gates.
Interesting. You know, I'm sure we could talk about dams all day and about dam safety and everything, but right now I only have two questions. I mean, maybe we should almost do a podcast on like how Carr operates, how Falls operates and everything. But anyways, I've been near Carr dams and I've heard rangers talk about pi meters. I mean, some of the dams have like pi meters on there. They're like round caps on the side of the dam. What's a pi meter?
Well, I think you're talking about piezometers. And piezometers, yeah. So those are one of the types of instrumentation that we have at a lot of our projects. And they are generally kind of pipes that stick out of our earthen dams. We have some inside of our concrete dams too. And they're like wells that we install through the dam. And sometimes they go way deep underneath the dam, and sometimes they just go into the dam. But we use them to monitor the pressure inside and under the dam, and that helps give us the full picture of how the dam is behaving and if it's everything's doing what it's supposed to do. It's really important that those are not vandalized. Unfortunately, you know, we have had some that people have found and thought it might be fun to throw some rocks down there if the cap was loose. And that's really bad because once those tubes are blocked, we can't use them anymore for monitoring the dam. And it is really expensive to install new ones. And it's also kind of risky to install new ones sometimes. You know, we don't want to do extra damage to the dam if we don't have to. So, you know, don't want to poke holes where we don't need to poke holes. So we want to utilize the piezometers that we have and keep using them to check on the health of the dam by looking at those pressures.
And there's definitely a lot of science that goes into making a dam and caring for a dam and protecting it and taking care of it. I mean, it seems like it's not just build it and forget about it. I mean, it's constantly making sure everything's going good, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we are constantly looking at these structures, you know, holidays and weekends. The rangers know more than anybody. We are always looking at these. And there's been kind of a joke that, like, when we do our exercises, we talk about scenarios of, oh, we have this crazy flood and, oh, it's a holiday, so no one's working. And, oh, like, and it sounds unbelievable. But, you know, we've had experiences where we've had huge floods on holiday weekends and we have had to exercise and then in real life know what to do, how we're going to handle it. And yeah, we look at them all of the time.
Yeah, I think the lowest level Falls has ever been was on Christmas in like 2008 or something. So stuff always happens when there's no one here and it's always a holiday, it seems like, or something too. So, well, Megan, we definitely really appreciate you being on this podcast. It seems like you're very passionate about the dam and passionate about dam safety, and we are really grateful to have you in our district. So is there anything else you'd like to share about dam safety or Carr dams? Any closing words? Anything else you'd like to say?
Sure. I am passionate about it. And thanks a lot for having me on. I do want to make sure I stress that, you know, dam safety is a shared responsibility. In the Corps, we make sure we inspect and monitor our dams and repair them when necessary. But it's important for our elected leaders to hold civil works infrastructure as a priority so we can continue to have funds to do those activities. And it's important for recreators to follow the signage around our projects. You know, don't get too close to the dam or in restricted areas. Those signs are there for your safety as well as the dam safety. And it's important for residents and businesses downstream to have that evacuation plan if they're in an area that needs one. And last, I wanted to bring up too, you know, I think your podcast focuses a lot on our lakes projects, which is great. And we have a lot of people there. But we also have three low head dams in our district on the Cape Fear River. And those are those navigation projects. And low head dams can be really dangerous for people. So that's kind of when you ask me, you know, is dam safety the safety of the dam or the safety of the people? When we talk about low head dams, I'm definitely more concerned with safety of the people. Low head dams have the nickname of drowning machines. And it's really important if you're recreating around a low head dam to follow that signage. If you're kayaking or canoeing on a stream going downstream, it could be really difficult to see that horizon disappear in front of you with, over a low head dam. So make sure you follow those signs and, you know, portage your kayak or whatever around those dams. And then if you're a downstream of dam, I think people like to fish really close to dams, but it's important not to get too close to where that water is kind of boiling downstream of a dam, because it can create a circulatory effect and you can get stuck in there. And no matter how strong of a swimmer you are, it will not end well. So I guess just, you know, follow the signage that we put out there. It's there for a reason. And again, it's a shared responsibility. So knowing where you may be at risk because of a dam, the benefits of the dam of, you know, it's worth it to have it there, but then knowing what to do if you get a call that you might need to evacuate or take some other action.
Yeah, one of the sign of a true great dam program specialist is mentioned about water safety too. So thank you for putting that in there as well. So thank you for your time, Megan.
Yeah, thanks.
Hey, David, since we've been talking about careers, maybe we can ask Megan just about how she got into dam safety.
Yeah, Megan, how'd you get into your position? I mean, what's a little bit of your background? How did how'd you get to be where you are?
Well, that's it's kind of an interesting story. So like I said, my technical background is geology. I'm a geologist, and that's probably another reason why I like the mountains. There's more rocks there, but in the profession of dam safety, geologists were overlooked for a long time. Some of our historic failures that we talk about as case histories revolve around not paying attention to the geology under the dam and next to the dam. And the Corps of Engineers started to, all the federal agencies really started to realize the importance of geologists when we look at dam safety. And I was working in Baltimore District at the time as a geologist when I started to get included on dam inspections. And I was doing a lot of other things as a geologist as part of my day-to-day life. I was cleaning up environmental sites and doing investigations for building buildings on foundations and things. But one of the things I got to do was go on these dam inspections and learn about the design of dams and how it's important to understand that foundation to make sure that the structures we build are going to stand there for many, many years. And in all reality, I'm a hippie at heart. And I used to have a very different attitude towards dams, actually. I was kind of like, remove the dams, put the rivers back. But through, I guess, my work with the Corps, I started to see the benefits that our dams provide and the damage historically that had happened in some of these places because there were not flood risk reduction dams there, and some of those environmental reasons I talked about earlier with water quality. And I really started to see the benefit of them. And I came to the personal decision that, you know, we've built these structures, we need to take care of them, and we need to do what's right to protect the environment and people and property downstream to make sure that we can continue to provide those benefits and not put other people in harm's way. So that's kind of how I got into focusing on dam safety, and eventually got to manage the program in Pittsburgh District and then managing the program here in Wilmington. So it's been a fun ride.
So were you a volunteer at all with up there in Pennsylvania, or I guess you just went on USA Jobs and everything?
So I was finishing up grad school. I actually have an environmental science master's degree. And let me back up a minute, if you don't mind. So I graduated with a geology degree, but all of the career kind of advice I was given in college was geologists look for gas and oil, and I didn't want to do any of that. So I was kind of like panicking, like, I can't be a geologist. They just look for gas and oil and destroy the environment. And so I was like, I need to get qualified to do something else. So that is why I decided to get a master's degree in environmental science. But, you know, when you finish school, you need to pay your bills. So I applied for all the jobs I was qualified for. I was really interested in serving, you know, the country and with a federal job. So I did go to USA Jobs and applied for a lot of things. And luckily, the first job I was accepted for was a geologist job in Baltimore District in Maryland. So that was how everything started. And it's amazing how your career may change just because of the different jobs you're put on in the government. In the Corps in particular, I think there are a lot of learning and training opportunities, and you get to try a lot of different things. And if you like one of those things, a lot of times you can kind of shape your own future and get put on certain details and, you know, make your way in that field that you're interested in, which is really great.
Perfect. Thank you. Megan, you've been awesome.
Well, Megan, we definitely thank you for coming on today. I think all of our listeners will find that very interesting. You know, a lot of people, I know I've been guilty of it, when you drive up to those dams from the downstream side, when you're looking at the full size of it, you know, I think it's natural for one to look up and think, wow, what would happen if all that gave way right now? So to kind of to let everyone know that there are people like you that specifically manage dam safety, I think that puts a lot of people at ease that, you know, that is something that we do keep an eye on and that we do monitor.
Yeah, we definitely monitor it, but it's also good to ask those questions when you do. I mean, it is impressive sometimes. You drive up and it's like, wow, and there's water behind that. But those questions are good to ask and to find those answers for yourself and how they personally affect you, and make sure you are ready to react if you need to. That's a good thing to do.
Absolutely. So we definitely appreciate your time today, and we're going to see what we have coming on the horizon. So I think Elaine's going to tell us about what's on the horizon.
Yeah. So right now it's the summer, but the summer is going by pretty quickly, and it's almost going to be the fall, and we have National Public Lands Day coming up. That's going to be on Saturday, September 28th. And that is a big nationwide single day volunteer effort across a lot of different land management agencies. So you can check with a park or a lake nearby where you live to volunteer on that day. And that is going to be a fee-free day at all Army Corps recreation sites. So if you're planning to visit or volunteer with that day, September 28th is the day to check out. And we will have more information from each of our individual projects as that comes up.
Awesome. Thank you. Great information to have out there. All right, Miss Emily Jones, I think you have a water safety message for us today.
I do. And I actually, it's somewhat connected to what David talked about way back at the beginning with his why he likes mountains more than the beach. Since we're in July now and it's hot and it's sunny and it's humid in most of our projects, all of that stuff still connects to water safety. While we're recreating in and around the water, of course, we want to always wear our life jackets, but we also need to be aware of the natural environment and conditions around us, right, with the weather. So if it's really hot, if it's really sunny, if there's a lot of humidity, you need to stay hydrated if you're on the water, recreating, whether you're fishing, swimming or boating, make sure we stay hydrated. We have our, you know, shade where necessary, and we wear our protective clothing. So don't forget to follow all of those safety measures as well. Also while wearing a life jacket near the water.
Very good. Thank you for that, Miss Emily. And with that, that wraps up our podcast today. So Special thank you once again to Megan. I think all the information that she gave us today was great. And special thank you to David for leading that interview. This is a great interview to listen to, and that was awesome. So we look forward to seeing everyone next month. And until then, be safe out there.